This is Pete Fletzer. On this episode of Around the Galaxy, we're spending time with Dominic Pace from The Mandalorian. Join us as we talk about being on set, meeting George Lucas, and the benefits of being typecast. So strap yourselves in, relax, and enjoy this journey around the galaxy. Welcome to episode number 39 of Around the Galaxy, the Star Wars fan talk show. I am your host, Pete Fletzer. We are a part of the Making Star Wars Podcast Network. So when you're done here and you're still in need of more Star Wars podcasting, head on over to makingstarwars.net. And if you wouldn't mind, show a little support and some love for some of my fellow podcasters over there. Shows like Tarkin's Top Shelf and Tatooine Sons and Now This Is Podcasting and The Sith List. All just to name a few, whole bunch of great shows over there for you to go and check out and support. And speaking of support, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you to like, subscribe, share, rate, review us here at Around the Galaxy on whatever podcast service you use, and maybe share us on Twitter, and I don't know, call your friends, and you know, take out a billboard and do a mass mailing or something. Just tell everybody you know about Around the Galaxy and all the fun that we're having here with all of our guests. We continue to have fun, not just on this show, but also on Streaming Star Wars, which is a brand new show, which I just launched with my friend David Amelotti from Beyond the Blastoise every Friday night live on YouTube on the Beyond the Blastoise channel. We're going to be spending some time analyzing and overanalyzing and obsessing and recapping all the Star Wars content that we're going to be getting from Disney Plus. And the best part about that is we get to do that with you live. So head on over to Beyond the Blastoise on YouTube and like and subscribe that channel so you know when we do go live. And we'll be talking about shows like The Mandalorian. Speaking of The Mandalorian, this week we have Dominic Pace, who has a part on that show. And he's going to be talking to us tonight about how he got the role and everything it means to him. Dominic, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Dream come true here, you know, being part of this amazing series that we all love so much and this amazing franchise. So I couldn't be better. And thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And it's exciting to talk to somebody who A, is a fan, and B, is a part of you're a part of it now, man. That's living the dream.
Thank you so much. You know, it's funny. I was actually thinking today, I said, you know, aside from Filoni and Favreau, I said, I wonder if there's any actors themselves who were actually genuine collectors and fans of the franchise. I mean, I know, you know, you always hear the stories that people are fans, but it's not, you know, you never know if they're true collectors there like a lot of us there. So it's just beyond words. And I can't tell you how privileged I feel and how grateful I am and excited I am to pay it forward to so many Star Wars fans and various causes throughout the country associated with Star Wars, the Star Wars brand there.
Yeah, so let's start by finding out a little bit about you and a little bit about how, you know, your introduction to Star Wars and what it sort of meant to you your whole life up until, you know, now that you're in it.
Yeah, I had a single mom. You know, we didn't have much money, and the one thing that always sticks out to me now is how she really went out of her way to always create the level of imagination and excitement for us. You know, you have that beautiful movie that Roberto Benigni did called It's a Beautiful Life, you know, and obviously mm-hmm. there was this, you know, horrible situation, and obviously that's an extreme example. But I equate that to my mom in many ways, and the fact that, you know, we didn't have much money, but she did everything she could to provide for my sister and I, whether it was going to the library and listening to records, things that, you know, didn't cost too much, or those original 12 action figures, which meant so much to me, to create with my imagination within my room. I was 5 years old when I was introduced. And the intricacy of the side characters, the main characters, was something that really has stuck with me my entire life. When I was 6 years old, I watched Empire Strikes Back in a packed theater. The magic and the genius of George Lucas combined with the amazing power and resonance of the music of John Williams, which I think touches a child even more, you know, where they have a lot of these moms who play the music inside the womb. I feel like the power of music, even at that age, kind of resonates in a more firm, has more of a firm grasp on our minds and on our souls. So a lot of this has to do with John Williams as well in terms of what an inspiration he's been. And it's not only inspiration throughout the Star Wars series, but also as an actor, you're always looking for inspiration and motivation through your characters. And I always go back to John Williams, whether it's through his Star Wars music or other music as well, just because the power that he holds, he just has this magic to be able to pull at all our heartstrings. And we have all, anyone who has a heartbeat has felt it at one time or another in their life.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny. We always talk about how Star Wars is famous for one of its biggest differentiators back in the 70s and 80s when it first hit was the fact that it was a different looking universe. It didn't look like Flash Gordon and quote unquote future, but it was also that music that you know, I can't imagine a Star Wars with that binary sunsets or without even. You know, I think I'm just a couple years older than you, maybe not that much, but I recall because it was before VHS and it was before the movies were on every weekend. And so listening to the soundtrack was how I saw the movie again.
Yeah. You create it within your imagination, just like the toys did for us. You know, I felt so bad. I have two sons, 14 and 11, and I bought them a couple of play sets when they were mid-age there, you know, at 5 and 6. And it's just with all the social media now, sometimes I fear for the kids these days because the magic that you talk about is the same that I had, which, right. Again, is the reason why we're talking about this series 40-plus years later. Right. It really was able, you know, whether it was the music or the toys or just the story itself and that binary sunset, which says so much to each and every one of us, that whether you're starting off in life or you're starting on a new path, the music that this man has created and the magic of George Lucas is just beyond this galaxy. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Did Star Wars inspire you to pursue acting?
It did. I can't say enough. I think we all identify with different characters in Star Wars for various reasons. Some, you know, there was just this great conversation in terms of how some people are inspired by the darker characters and for good reason. You know, we're talking about whether Darth Vader is likable or not. And I always say yes. The reason is some of us have gone through a horrible tragedy in our life or a loss, and we understand and we sympathize with the pain and suffering of somebody where you find the dark in life, you don't find the light because of all the horrible things that happened to you in life. Harrison Ford, just to flip that, his alpha, his command, his charisma to me, and just the way that he has always taken control of the screen, whether it's Air Force One, Jack Ryan, Indiana Jones, Han Solo, for me, it was something when I was in that theater, I wanted to stand up and I wanted to be a part of that, and I wanted to be part of that with conviction and with so much passion. So in many ways, it was the inspiration as to why I wanted to perform. I started in a high school musical. I was Danny Zuko in Grease.
Very nice.
the adrenaline was second to none. But once I started getting into my own, as I started getting older, I was playing a lot of tough guys and bad guys or what have you. The adrenaline rush combined with a little bit of minor stunts really kind of brought forth the energy and the power of performance. And it's been an inspiration ever since. It's not an easy life. I call myself a blue-collar actor to where you have to do every other job in order to keep it going. But it's been such an addiction because of that inspiration and that power that I felt amongst the characters within Star Wars there.
In The Mandalorian, you have a side character, I guess is a way to put it. And you know, when this episode drops, you'll have been seen in the background, and we know you hopefully will be coming up again in a future episode.
Correct.
So how did you end up getting into The Mandalorian? How did that work out?
You know, I left the restaurant business about 4 years ago. That was my survival job in between guest stars and co-stars. Over the course of my career, I have had close to over 100 television and film appearances. In between that, it is no days of glory, let's put it that way. You know, I promised my wife, I promised my kids that whatever I have to do in order to put food on my table, there is no diva mentality, whether it's, you know, driving Uber, waiting tables, whatever you have to do, you know, get registering with some of these companies to where you do background or you know, you have to do a makeup test. Mm-hmm. Well, anyhow, long story short, there's a company called Legacy Effects, which basically runs a lot of the special effects prosthetics for both Marvel and Disney and Star Wars. And there was a gentleman by the name of Brian Sipe. I was called in for just a simple makeup test. There was no guarantee of any further work. There was no discussion in terms of what the job was. I worked on prosthetics. I used to double Frankenstein on Van Helsing with Hugh Jackman, who, by the way, was such an amazing gentleman. I worked prosthetics on Van Helsing as well as Bright with Will Smith. I was one of the orcs. And I was in the chair for about 6 hours, and it's not claustrophobic to me. It's pleasant. I enjoy sci-fi. As an Italian-American, you know, again, we get stereotyped, which I don't mind. Well, I don't mind playing the heavy, the bad guy. It's all this, all the drama right now with all the social issues. I get it. I don't mind. You know, I grew up around people like this, so it's not a problem. But to escape that, for me, I love the fantasy world. Right. You know, an Italian-American kid in Westchester County, New York, it was like watching Goonies and E.T. and you know, of course, Jurassic Park and Star Wars. To me, that was so magical. So to be a part of that, which involves prosthetics, which involves a unique character, makes it so magical for me. I was there for 6 hours and very patient, very respectful, always very humble in whenever I do work. And I gave Brian my business card respectfully afterwards. I said, hey, I don't know what you're working on, but it would be an honor to work for you again. And he gave me the most complicated prosthetic. It took 2 hours to get on. When I get to a what was called the project was called Huckleberry, get to a wardrobe room. I did not know anything at the time until I walked into the wardrobe room. I look on the wall and I start seeing photos that any Star Wars fan would relate to in 2 seconds. And I can't tell you how choked up I got when I saw my name next to the word bounty hunter. It was beyond words. There was three outfits they wanted me to try on. Two of the three outfits were masked. And Brian fought for me to make sure that I was seen and that he was able to have me as his specimen to do this amazing prosthetic and to create this very, very unique character. He did a Greenpeace project 2 years prior to where he had this 90-pound model, this female model, and they had bumps on the woman's head. You know, he put the prosthetic on, and it had these bumps, and it had kind of had a line down its center, very similar to a gecko. Mm-hmm. So that sort of became the nickname, and I kept referring to him as Gecko the Bounty Hunter. Richard A. Pura is an amazing costume designer. He has done previous projects with the Star Wars series. The man, it's almost as if he has visited space beyond by the talent that he has in terms of the way that he dresses his people. And he was a lot to give credit to in terms of creating the rest of this character. I do want to say one thing for the fans that obviously was just absolutely amazing. Samuel Jackson always has this story in terms of being presented with a suitcase full of lightsabers from either George Lucas or somebody on the crew. Well, I had the similar experience with the blaster when there was a whole table full of blasters. And I wish every Star Wars fan could have gotten to my shoes at that time and have picked a blaster, almost like a Harry Potter fan to pick your wand of what, you know, is similar to you. I'm 6'4", 260 pounds. I picked the biggest blaster I could. I wanted to come out with guns blazing, and it was just such an amazing experience to have that chance as a Star Wars fan my whole life to literally get my blaster and create it within the universe was beyond words there.
So tell me a little bit about the way you approached playing this again, and what I love about it. First of all, I think they did right by picking a Star Wars fan because you're bringing. You know, you're bringing that excitement that anybody that I would bring, that anybody who gets that chance to bring there. So did you create sort of a backstory for your character in your mind before you stepped on set the first day or?
Without question, I remember rumors of Kenobi, already at that time. And I would like to believe that I was one of them who went to go seek out Luke. I like to play it in terms of being ruthless, unapologetic. There's a bit of events that transpire later on in the series to where there is a situation to where if I had any compassion, I would have perhaps have done something different. And I did not. So I wanted to, I thought of, the incredible actor, Kane Hodder, who portrayed Jason.
Yep.
In terms of being, having that imposing figure, but also having that level of power and intensity throughout. And you bring up a very good point in terms of being a passionate Star Wars fan. I thought there was one moment I sort of had this Rudy Rudiger moment where, you know, you get your chance on the field, you know, once or twice. And one of the stunt coordinators, there was a scene where, you know, it was a little bit of action. And he said, hey, you know, if you want to scale it back here or scale back there. And I looked at him. I said, look, I've been waiting for this my whole entire life. Man. I don't care if I got to fly off two stories off a building. The fact to be here right now, whatever you need from me, I will give my heart and give my soul. So I had that experience a couple of days there, and it was a lot of fun because not only just to be a character, but also to play out a little bit of action was absolutely priceless for me.
That's fantastic. So how long were you on the set? How many days of shooting did you have?
I was there for approximately about 9 days, and I had one day which was a screen test. It was my first major screen test to where we were in front of John and David, and there was sort of this, the water moisturizer behind me, sort of almost like a very Tatooine-like set to where they wanted me to just do a few simple actions but also stay in character. Initially, the prosthetic was very similar to Gecko, where it had these bumps. And I politely suggested to Brian, who then told, David and John, if it's okay, I wanted to change it to horns. It wasn't my decision necessarily, but just again, with my height and the fact that this was going to be a once in a lifetime opportunity, I couldn't bite my tongue. I said, this would be really cool if we can change this Gecko character to horns. And he did it politely before the first day of shooting. One thing that I do want to say that was beyond magical was the first day of filming. I was there. George Lucas was there.
Oh my gosh! Wow.
And it was something to again at this level. You when you're dealing with $100 million budget, you can't say a word. You're not going around and fraternizing with Kathleen Kennedy, telling her what your thoughts are on how the series should go. but you know they say jump, you say how high. But just to the honor of being around him and Jon Favreau and David Filoni and Kathleen Kennedy. And there's another amazing director who now has been given the helm, I believe, of a couple more episodes or another series, Deborah Chow. Mm-hmm. Again, was just one of the highlights of my career to be just a little small sliver of this galaxy. And this production is beyond anything I could have asked for.
So in looking at your IMDb, I don't want to say you're getting typecast, but man, you're playing characters called like Henchman and yep. Rocco and now Bounty Hunter.
It's funny. I don't mean to bring up politics and social issues and such, but I don't fight the, I like playing what I am perceived as.
Sure.
That doesn't bother me. Culturally, my grandfather was he was a World War II veteran, and he was a mailman. And we didn't have any connections with the mafia at all. At the same time, to ever be offended or to be, to feel sensitive over, well, oh, God, I don't know. You're putting me in a negative light. I disagree with that wholeheartedly. Right. Here to entertain. I'm not offended. I'm a proud Italian American. At the same time, to start playing these perfect, strong, independent men. No. Give me a little bit of dirt on my sleeve. Give me a little bit of a backstory. I'm starring in an upcoming film called Anonymous Killers with an amazing ensemble cast. There's a tremendous amount of flaws to me. I don't mind that at all. I'm just happy to be on the field and honored to be doing what I love for so long. So
yeah.
They see me in a certain way. If I want to change that, then let me go write a script myself. Stanley Tucci did that. He's had an amazing career. But yeah. At the same time, if I don't need to be the boy next door, that basically is the love interest. And I have a little bit of confusion sometimes with some of my peers in terms of getting so offended, because it's like, look, it's not saying that you're always going to play this or always going to play that. But also, I can't say that you're wrong when you see me 6'4" and imposing. I think it's pretty awesome, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean it's not a bad thing to be.
No,
right? You're not being cast as the little nerd. You're being like, you're the man.
Yeah, exactly. Now if you put me in a Slave Leia outfit, perhaps I'd actually. As the Italian mob, go right ahead. I see it. I can play it like the back of my hand.
So. Play what you can play, right? So. How was being on this set different than I see you do a lot of television, a lot of guest spots there, but tell me about this set versus a traditional TV set.
Well, here's a beautiful tribute to Disney and to the production. I have never seen a more beautifully diverse cast and crew. I was really impressed with that. First time ever I have seen a female first assistant director and a female second assistant director, and I thought that was very beautiful.
Wow.
There was a beautiful calmness about it, but also at the same time, you can sense the professionalism each and every second. You can feel the pleasantry of all of the executives, but also at the same time, the excitement within the cast and the crew that we were part of something so special. No matter what level your performance was at, no matter how big your role was, to be a part of that was really something else. It was different because if I did 15, 16 hours on a different set, I would start feeling it after 14 hours, after 12 hours, especially back to back to back. I was in three layers of costume. I was in a heavy prosthetic. The set was a little bit, kind of misty and warm. I remember they were talking about Dagobah, where it kind of gets a little bit, it got a little musty in there and such. I couldn't feel a thing because the adrenaline was pumping from start to finish. To sit in a makeup chair for 2 hours on, say, a crime drama, that would be really tedious. But each and every day, I came to set with like a kid in a candy store. I mean, just literally taking it in terms of the detail that they put to my makeup and to the prosthetic, and taking so much pride in when you hold that blaster and kind of taking that character in. Because again, this you can all relate. to my passion on set and how it was different from something else because of how much we care about this series.
Yeah. So it, you said George was on the set during the time you were there. Did you get a chance to speak to him? I know you said that, it's a different world when he's on set, but
I met him 15 years ago. I witnessed something that was very fascinating. And I think you can count on one hand how many people you can see that literally are God within their creation of over that has the budget of over $100 million. You can talk about maybe perhaps Walt Disney when he was alive, J.K. Rowling, Spielberg, and George Lucas. And I remember him talking to Favreau, talking about the detail of the Mandalorians and the universe. And I was so fascinated with hearing that because here it is, like somebody who is literally God himself talking about his creation. I felt that that was so unique and such. I had the privilege of meeting him 15 years ago. I do have a photo with him. It was a charity event sponsored by Target called A Time for Heroes. And there were so many A-list celebrities there that he was walking around just like a regular Joe. And my wife and I, we went up to him and politely took a photo. And my wife, she confessed that half of our budget goes towards Star Wars collectibles. I had a Han Solo Carbonite life-size at that time. So he got a little chuckle out of that. But his demeanor has always been something very peaceful. And obviously, what a respect to the genius that he is. And you know, the other thing I want to say, obviously, there's a time right now where we talk about a lot of the negativity going on. And being from New York, you know, I'm a New York Met fan, but the Mets, the Yankees, the Cubs, the Boston Red Sox, we can't live without those teams. And the point I'm trying to make is that when you read in the media about those baseball teams, there's so much spit and mud and everything that the fans and the writers are tossing at it. But at the same time, you understand that the reason there is that sort of negativity is because we love that team. And right. Sometimes I would say that in regards to Star Wars, that there's so much a division right now between the fan base and of, oh, okay, how come these people feel so bad about this? Or feel so? Well, ironically, everybody I feel like is on the same page getting their Star Wars Episode 9 tickets the same day because we love it. And right. It doesn't mean that you necessarily hate the series at all. It's just because we love it so much. So yeah. I just want to say that. I know that Prinz brought out a little comment there, you know, a couple of months, you know, about a month ago or so. But I just think that there's love for even fans that are passionately negative in many ways, because I feel like they genuinely care about something that has meant so much to them for so long. And what a beautiful compliment that is to Disney and to George Lucas.
I think you're right. I think, you know, I'm hopeful because there is some of it that's genuinely, you know, there's it's coming from weird, dark places. But
sure, yes.
I like to believe that, and I'm with you on this, that the reason they're so upset or put off is because they have so much passion for it, right? I mean, it's the way I kind of described it once was, you know, it's sort of like that. Your child that you love to death, and then they go and do something that you can't agree with, and suddenly you're not going to stop loving that kid, but you can be disappointed in him.
Yeah, exactly. You love them. I mean, even Hamill himself, you know, came out and, you know, had his concerns here and there. But again, it's because we just love what this series has done to us. For me, Episode 5 in particular, in regards to the mythology, and then also, you know, I just recently realized with George Lucas, as far as the relationship he had with his father, me coming from a broken home, the parallels that we have to life in terms of the spirit and the energy that we bring forth in terms of our careers and also the relationships that we have with our family. That's, for me, just personally, when Star Wars resonates the most. And that's what I always love to see. And sometimes where, you know, you might have a negative vibe about one thing or the other. Sometimes it has to do with where maybe they walk away from that. But to me, that's what's always made it so special.
Well, I tell you, one of the things that I've learned, you know, this is, I've done 35, 40 shows so far. And one of the things that I've learned, and I'd love to get your perspective on, is Star Wars has truly become something that is now shared from generation to generation. I'm sharing it with my 7 and 10 year old. My dad took me to see Star Wars when I was 7 years old. Has it played that same role in your life with your kids?
Without question, you know, it's so funny because now the kids are getting older. So I'm still getting the Lego ships. And my wife, like, she's like, wait, I don't know if the kids want it. They're like, no, if you want it. But anyhow, my point is, since they were 4 years old, I've been creating this Lego Star Wars galaxy. I'll have to send you a picture in their bedroom. And the bonding time, just in general, of putting those Legos together is something that, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you're on your deathbed or whatever. It's really those precious moments that you had with your children discussing, you know, and debating Star Wars, even episode 9 coming up. My son, every time we're coming coming back from school, he's like, wait, I know. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, wait, no, I think that Rey is, you know, this, or I think Rey is that. And, you know, maybe the Emperor is, you know, but just the discussion that it opens up in such a peaceful and loving way in this amazing imaginary world, I think is the most beautiful thing we've experienced in our lifetime in many ways.
It really is. And you know, for me and my daughter, we've she's 10 and we've been watching the films. We're preparing for episode 9, where she's dying for The Mandalorian. And in fact, when you and I first started talking months and months ago, and I told her I was talking to a guy who might be in the show, she loved it. So I can imagine my connection. How did your kids react when you said, hey guys, I'm going to be in a Star Wars thing?
Oh man, I hate to be a Debbie Downer. It's so funny because they've seen me on television since I was a kid. But I'll tell you, we had a very special moment. The moment that the second trailer came out, I got a text from another podcaster, and he said, you're in it, you're seen. And my kids' faces lit up. But I got to tell you, there's a little bit of irony to that because they're so used to seeing me, you know. But the thing is that these crime dramas are just kind of grown-up, mature content. Right. So it kind of takes out the buzz as opposed to being on Disney. You know, I don't normally get cast with, you know, for Disney Channel or Nickelodeon. So for them, throughout my career, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, there's Dad. But obviously, this is going to be kind of a first in terms of them kind of taking it in for a second and being appreciative there. So, yeah, very That's excited.
Great. So tell me about your first steps on the set. When you finally get there, you've gone through the process, you got selected, you knew you were putting on the makeup, mm-hmm. you arrive. And I imagine just from that very short clip that we saw that you're in a scene that's a room full of Star Wars aliens.
Yeah.
What is that like?
You know, it's funny because I wish that everything I do, I don't know if it's a, you know, a cultural thing or a religious thing, but I always wish that I can share, you know, the joy for me is being able to share. And there was a scene, you know, where we're having this cantina scene there, and the camera was to my back. And the one thing, you know, that you create over time as an actor is you create the space, you create the universe. And I wish I could have taken everyone into my head for a good minute or two when I finally got there, you know, as an actor and as a performer, to where everything else disappeared. And with the cameras to your back and these three aliens that I was interacting with, it was just something so special that I wish every Star Wars fan could have experienced, because sometimes we are, of course, well, not sometimes, all the time, we either have, you know, you have your figures as a child, or, you know, you're watching it on the screen, which is sort of two-dimensional there. But to be able to be fully immersed in the universe, I thought that was really special. I think the fact that they have Galaxy's Edge now, to be able to, you know, have all the fans be able to immerse in the universe, I think is amazing. I had a lot of anxiety to a certain extent, because I felt like I was worried that if I got this far and I got cut, which has happened before. I had a guest star with one of my idols, Chaz Palminteri. It was a show on CBS, and I was promoting it. I took a $1,000 ad out in the Hollywood Reporter, and I was so excited, and the show got canceled. It was a show called Dr. Vegas starring Rob Lowe. So you just never know. So I was holding my breath. And then there was about 4 days into it where Deborah Chow had to do a lineup. And it was for a very special scene to continue on for one of her other episodes. And I made the cut. And that one, that to me, once I was in this other scene to where I was with one of the stars, literally just that's when I kind of got to have a sigh of relief and really be able to get into my character and really take a moment to just enjoy the fact of being immersed in my childhood fantasy there.
It's amazing. It really is. It's one thing to pursue acting as a Star Wars fan, but then to get that opportunity is really fantastic.
Yeah.
So you and I have spoken. You said that you told me you're doing some work with some charities. Which charities do you support, or which charity is your sort of charity of choice?
Thanks so much. Well, up until now, it's been the LA Mission, which deals with our homeless problem. We have over 60,000 homeless in Los Angeles. There's also a women's downtown shelter, specifically catering to women and homeless women. There is also the LA Children's Hospital of Los Angeles. Shane's Inspiration, which builds playgrounds for handicapped children. But now moving forward with the 501st, as well as the Mandalorian Mercs, when we do these conventions in each town, I want to make it a point to try and fly in earlier, whether it's an event, whether it is a couple of autographs I can donate to some of their causes locally, to not only spread the love in Los Angeles, but also throughout the country and potentially the world. If I'm invited to some of these conventions, the Mandalorian Mercs and 501st, I am all in with all of their needs. And I really look forward to supporting them and being part of the Star Wars family and charitable organizations through through Star Wars there.
That's great. So we'll keep an eye on that sort of thing. So you just talked about the 501st. You talked about the Mando Mercs. Do you have any of their costumes? Do you have any for yourself?
I've never gone that far, but I'll tell you, in terms of my collection, I do love blasters. I do love lightsabers. So I have a collection that spans not only the weapons, but also at the same time, all the figures and the Lego ships, etc. I never got into the cosplay, but I can't tell you how much I appreciate people that are so enthused with this series and it, how they're so immersed in it. It just means so much to me because, again, it has meant so much to me in so many ways personally. So much through dressing up through a character or finding my vision through them. I think perhaps because I'm able to play that out through my career in many ways as far as playing different characters. But I have such an appreciation as an actor because I know what it feels like to kind of take on the skin of somebody else, not to mention such an amazing nod to this amazing franchise. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for all of them, not to mention what they do in terms of their charitable causes there.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I love. You know, I don't have the patience or skills to be a cosplayer. I have nothing but respect for what they do, but the fact that they've turned it into a charitable organization is fantastic. In fact, one for my son's fifth birthday, I think it was, there was a local saber guild, and we had three Jedi and three Sith showed up at our house, and my son was lost his mind, and all they asked for payment was that we made a donation to a cause that they supported. And I just thought that was amazing, and just to bring just so much joy to this 15 children in my yard, this to have some Jedi show up at your house. I mean, can you imagine that when you and I were kids, if six Jedi just showed up at your house one day for your birthday?
It would have been amazing. You know, I just got an email from a friend a couple of days ago, and they were doing a Star Wars themed soccer tournament for the kids. And he said, "Tom, do you mind just leaving a video call?" And I just left a post on my Facebook page basically saying, anyone who wants a video call, or if I can leave, you know, a video or just an audio to cheer up somebody's day, I will do it at no charge whatsoever, because that's what it's all about, is touching other people's lives, being so grateful to have this opportunity that so many Star Wars fans dream of, to now at 44 years old, to be able to pay it forward any way that I can next year is something that is on the top of my list. And I can't wait to be able to touch people's lives in that way that so many have touched us in that manner.
Yeah, excellent. So I think you were at Chicago Celebration. Are you going to be at Celebration in Anaheim?
Let's hope so. I'm hoping that the Bounty Hunter takes off to such an extent that Disney cannot deny having every single event. But we will see whether I'm as a fan or whether I have my own booth. It remains to be seen. But I actually, if Disney sends that letter, I'll be there with bells on without question.
That's awesome. Yeah, I missed Chicago, and I still kick myself for it. So my fly in the family out to Anaheim, we're going to be there for a Celebration in 2020.
I can't get enough of just the passion of these fans and just the joy that they have through this franchise. And I can't tell you how much I'm excited to be around that. And like I said, to be able to touch somebody's life to where if they have an opportunity to meet me and it's a positive effect on their life, that to me means more to me than anything else.
I can tell you, it's really interesting. There's such... I ended up getting into writing for Star Wars Galaxy magazine 20 years ago because I'd written questions for my father's trivia game. Long story, I've told it before. We'll bore everybody with it again. But so my father used to go to a lot of the conventions, and at the time it was Star Trek conventions. There was no Star Wars conventions. It was Star Trek. But there would be Star Wars guys there, and he met Dave Prowse and a bunch of those folks there. But what was interesting was, every single character, and it continues today, every single character, whether, you know, literally the guy who was the tail in Jabba the Hutt was signing autographs once to guys who, you know,
the ice cream man from Empire Strikes Back.
Yes, right. Wilroy Hood is like the guy, right? So so it's great. But it's what's cool is, like, Star Wars fans are truly passionate about it. Like, they want every piece of that they can get.
I love it. You know, when I was in high school, I was friends with everyone, but what really turned me off was the people that were too cool for school, you know? Right. I love the people that were enthusiastic with life, enthusiastic about whatever it could be, you know, whether it's music or sports or pop culture. Those are the people that I always enjoy hanging out with. So just to be able to gravitate towards that now is it's going to be really a labor of love next year and doing. And I also love to travel, too. So that's going to be a lot of fun as well.
That's awesome. That's great. So when I get to this point in my show, Dom, I have a 10 question sort of Q&A thing, and you're an actor, so you've probably seen inside the actor's studio with
Yes, please. Yeah, it's so, very similar. Okay,
got it. So similar, except all Star Wars. So I'll start with, what is your favorite Star Wars movie, TV show, or book?
Hands down, Episode 5 from start to finish. You just can't say enough about Erwin Kirshner and also Lucas. And again, the connection with family as well as mythology and believing in yourself, do or do not, there is no try. I've carried those words with me all throughout my career, and we're still here this day, 25 years later. Again, a strong IMDb resume, and Episode 5 without question, hands down.
That's great. Yeah, it's one of those movies that's not just a great Star Wars movie. It's a great movie, top to bottom. Without a doubt. So I have to ask you, what's your least favorite Star Wars movie, TV show, or book?
Oh, God. I will answer that. But again, let me answer it with just the understanding that what I may appreciate and somebody else may not appreciate and somebody else does, I have a tremendous amount of respect for them. We went to the movies the other day, and my wife, the woman working at the concession, she was talking to me with her eyes lit up about if I've seen Dark Phoenix or not yet. And I never saw it. I have no interest in it whatsoever.
Right.
But the way that she was expressing herself, my wife looked at me and she said, do you understand that even Star Wars, it's for everybody and it's not just for me. And that's what makes Star Wars beautiful. But with that being said, being able to relate to Harrison Ford and Han Solo as an alpha male and to really connect with the characters to me that were very powerful and to see myself through that. I was just a little turned off with the last one, with the Last Jedi. I looked up to Mark Hamill and Luke so much. I certainly had different expectations in terms of where he should have gone. But without saying, you know, again, it could be somebody else at home that was very touched by that.
Sure.
And their life is just as important as mine. Their heart, their dreams are just as important as mine. So I will hesitate to say that. Oh, it's, you know, if you liked it, the heck with you.
Right.
It was not for me, but at the same time, a tremendous amount of respect for all the fans, whether they're upset about a certain series or film or whether they love it. I'm there to support you 100% because, again, what you might inspire you, it is never my place to ever put you down.
Yeah, the internet could use more of that. That's great. Because everybody has a favorite film, and the way Jason Fry put it on my show was that it's Attack of the Clones was his 10th favorite Star Wars film. So,
but I'll tell you, Clones brings up a good point in that sometimes you may not like the whole entire film, but you know, if you take Episode 1, it was like, you know, the fight with Maul, and then Episode 2 for me, I loved the oh my God, why am I drawing a blank on the water planet there, the name of it,
Kamino.
Kamino. I loved Kamino. I thought that whole series and then the intensity between Tamura Morrison and Ewan McGregor was absolutely amazing. I mean, you know, to feel that power and the energy and to see a young Boba. So I always like to also pick from the best moments, you know, at the end of Sith. You know, that brotherhood between Ewan McGregor and Hayden Christensen, how powerfully that was played and how much, again, that crossovers to the parallels of life, to maybe it's your own brother or your own friend, to where we go in different directions. So sometimes I always believe in anything in life, whether it's your job or just, you know, just your day-to-day social activities, in taking the positive out of any experience. And I think The Clones is a good example of that for me.
That's awesome. So would you consider yourself an Imperial or a Rebel?
Oh, you know, I'll tell you, there's nothing better. I have this role in Anonymous Killers coming up. There's nothing better within the imaginary world of working on the deviance and the sort of the darkness of a character. It makes it so much more interesting than just being the humble guy next door. I'm a nice guy in real life, but it's so much fun to turn it on. I have a nice guest star in November on 9-1-1 with Fox opposite Ronda Rousey, and just get to play Katie, fight promoter. So I would definitely be an Imperial there as opposed to a Rebel.
That's great. What is your favorite Star Wars sound effect?
Oh, Well, now we go back to Attack of the Clones. That was the most awesome thing ever. That freaking little, you know, what was that little torpedo they sent out?
Oh, yes.
In the middle of the outer space when he's trying to evade Ewan McGregor Obi-Wan. That was amazing.
Yeah, the seismic charge in the asteroid field. Yes, that's it.
That was the coolest thing ever. How that delay on it. I thought that was the greatest special effect, sound effect I've ever heard.
That's awesome. And that's a surprisingly common pick. Well, maybe not surprising because it's so cool.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
All right. Who's your favorite, R2 or 3PO? If you have to choose one of those two to hang out with.
R2. I mean, obviously, I think it was, you know, especially with Han Solo, who did such a great job with shutting him up every now and then. I mean, he certainly was annoying. And again, with that, the robot in Solo, that was even more annoying there. But R2, hands down.
Yeah. Yeah, R2 he's the best. All right, so what spaceship or vehicle from the Star Wars universe would you most like to own? TV, whatever.
It's crazy. Every time I play the $100 million Powerball or Mega Millions, I always dream of having a life-size Millennium Falcon in my backyard to where, you know, we would have charitable, events each weekend where I would have a man cave in the back with this big flat screen, a bar in the corner. You know, we have like a little sports area in the other side. So it would have to be the Falcon. When my mom got me that when I was 8 years old, it was just hours and hours of playing with that.
And it's basically too how the Falcon has almost become a character in its own right in the films.
Without question. I hope in 9, we don't see anything too tragic happen that was a very special part of childhood there. I had a friend. He repairs old toys and stuff and different pieces, and mine is kind of banged up. And I said, no, I said, I want to just keep it as is, because that to me is the original. And that's special to me, even though it's not in perfect shape there. But yeah, definitely the Falcon.
That's great. Yeah. You know, there's a Lego commercial that shows the Falcon banging into Kylo Ren's ship. And I'm a little worried about the Falcon in episode 9, but I think, you know, what makes me think it's not going anywhere, to be honest, is it's in Disney World now, right? They have to keep that.
Right. There's a blown up ship there. No, I'm with you. Yeah.
Okay. What do you like better, Porg, Ewok, or Jar Jar Binks?
Ewoks, hands down. I always have fed into the aspect that it is for children in many ways. And the Ewoks, I thought, were very easy to die. I was a child. I didn't even see that criticism. I remember one of my favorite films was Popeye. And I remember the critics tore it all apart, starring Robin Williams and Shelley Duvall.
Yes.
The same thing with the Ewoks. I mean, as a kid, it was just so easy to swallow. I thought it was awesome. So without question, the Ewoks. That little Warwick, so adorable there.
Come on. Yeah. Get it. Okay. So other than Gecko the Bounty Hunter, if you could be any character in Star Wars, who would it be and why?
Oh, you know, I'd love to, you know, if I ever got to the A-list status there to explore some of the Old Republic, because I think with the bald head, there's some of those special Darths that would be pretty awesome with another type of mouthpiece. I was so grateful I got to have that mouthpiece. It looks so cool, kind of that Bane-like feature.
Yeah.
So to be able to portray a Sith with that same sort of mouthpiece and just the intensity of my eyes and the bald head. Some kind of a Sith, I think, would be really amazing.
I can see them casting you as Darth Bane. You got the size, you got the look. I think we could do that. I think let's push for that.
We'll see what happens. You never know. Yeah. I'm hoping that Gecko goes into the Kenobi series. Kind of has a little altercation with Kenobi there. That would be amazing.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
That's before Mandalorian there, so that would be amazing. Yeah,
that's right. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. I think I got your. I can guess this one, but original trilogy, prequels, or sequels? Where's your loyalty, or not loyalty, preference?
Prequels, yeah.
Prequels.
I'm so sorry. Or the original trilogy. Original trilogy, hands down. I thought you meant prequels or the sequels. No, original trilogy, hands down. You know, this is also. I mean, from coming from an actor standpoint, to where there is a lot to attribute to the performances. It's not only the magic that George Lucas created, but also you can't have that with a certain handful of actors. Stallone, right, for Han Solo, right? Or Pacino, or Robert Redford. You know, it never would have worked.
Yeah.
So to me, there's a lot to be said about Carrie Fisher, Mark Hamill themselves, Harrison Ford, and of course Ian McDiarmid. and Billy Dee Williams, the charm and charisma. I mean, it's just that lights up the screen. If you miscast that, I'm lost. And I'm not to say that the prequels did or the sequels did, but I mean, the connection that I had to that trio was second to none.
I think that's one of the things that makes, and I couldn't agree more. I think I was talking to a guest not too long ago about, you know, the sort of approachability, right? First of all, they were still relatively unknown. Harrison Ford was on his way, off of American Graffiti. Mark Hamill was still relatively unknown.
Yeah.
And Carrie Fisher was
sitting.
right. But every one of those characters they're easy on the eyes, but they're approachable. And they feel like people, you know.
Yes.
And to your point, and you know better than anybody else as an actor, that chemistry that just naturally happened between all of them is something they couldn't bottle.
Yeah. And I don't want to rustle any feathers here. But the other thing, too, that I miss, and I don't know where we went wrong with this. I think with the whole, new social issues in regards to the hypersensitivity. But I miss romance. I mean, I don't understand why. I know there was some speculation in terms of Raylo. I don't see that happening at all because I feel like all of a sudden some of the younger generations might be offended. I miss the passion of a man needing a woman and a woman needing a man. I think that's amazing. Or vice versa, or, any gender for that matter. But I miss that passion, that love, and that need for each other. I don't know why we went away from that. But I'll be the first man to admit I'm not strong and independent. I need a woman. I need to love somebody. And I'd love to see that back in film. And I can't tell you how grateful I was, when you see Carrie Fisher pull off her mask and Return of the Jedi and say, somebody who loves you very much. How do you not get choked up about that? And you feel the love between them. And it's some of the most beautiful chemistry I've seen on film.
That's awesome. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That's fantastic. All right. The last question on this list is, what is your favorite Star Wars quote?
I think in terms of just paralleling my career, in terms of times when things go down or they don't work out as planned, is just,
do or do not. There is no try.
It's just beautiful. Of course, you'd love to get that with your wife. As far as I love you, I know that's priceless. I got a bad feeling about that. It's starting to get old for me. I get it. It's like Stan Lee. It's like, I get it. but at the same time, do or do not, there is no try.
That's great. I'm going to give you a bonus question because I know you're a collector. What's your favorite thing in your collection?
I think something that basically symbolizes the entire series for me is the Luke Skywalker's lightsaber I have from Icons. And that to me is very special because it's also the symbolism of being a Jedi and being in control and having that power and also the coming of man, coming of age, which I think is always had a lot of meaning for me growing up there. So it's the Luke Skywalker Icon Saber.
That's great. Well, thanks for your time. I know we're going to get you hopefully on our live streaming show where we cover the Mando in a couple weeks. But where can people find you online? Where can they keep up with you?
Sure, absolutely. Dominic Pace on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, LinkedIn. And again, very approachable. I appreciate the fans so much in terms of supporting this character and as well as moving forward with charitable causes from all the members of the 501st as well as the Mandalorian Mercs. I look forward to being very approachable throughout the years. And I'm so grateful to Lucasfilm, to Disney for this opportunity and hope to pay it forward in a million different ways.
That's awesome. And I'm looking forward to seeing more of you on The Mandalorian. And I look forward to talking to you again in a couple of weeks.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Well, that wraps it up for this episode of Around the Galaxy. Thank you to Dominic Pace, and thank you for listening. If you had fun, please subscribe, like, share, rate us at 5 stars, and review it. If you really liked it, please feel free to head on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/aroundthegalaxy. We're also excited to let you know we have Around the Galaxy swag available on tpublic.com/user/aroundthegalaxy. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at ATGCast. And if you or someone you know would make a good guest, please drop us a line. So until next time, this has been Pete Fletzer, and we'll see you for our next trip around the galaxy. Around the Galaxy is copyright 2019 Pete and the Seat Studios. Our music is brought to us by the band Apollo's Ghost, whose brand new album has just dropped on iTunes and Spotify and wherever you find music.